This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 610. My name is Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my Curly Q co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. This is streaming live at koop.org. And as it has been, we are pre-recorded and homegrown. Stick with us.
Step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Wednesday, March 31st, 2021. On the show today, we have our friends from the Vortex talking about their show, Tales of a Blurred Ballerina. Spoiler alert, this one's done live. Also, a little later, we'll be talking to Austin Creative Alliance and two of their programs that they are doing. Lots to talk about, so stick with us after this song, or should I say, after song this.
Meals all three bring you make me fit in.
I really enjoyed that, and you got witty with your words there, and boy, I wouldn't be able to write that way. I would go back and forth and wonder, wait, no, huh?
I clever did. So I'm guessing that you don't know what show that is from.
No, I don't. You played it for me ahead of time, and then we got to listen to some stuff again, and please tell me more.
I did. It is from a show called Einstein's Dreams. And it had an off-Broadway premiere in 2019 by the Prospect Theater Company. It's got the book and lyrics by Joan Sidney Lessner. Sorry, that's book and lyrics. And then music and lyrics by Joshua Rosenblum. It had a concert performance in 2009 with Josh Bolton and Kate Schindel.
Really? So, it's funny. I'm not surprised you said Einstein just from listening to the, you know, what the context was and talking. Mm-hmm. And so, but.
Well, the idea is you approach.
Fascinating.
I know. If you go beyond light speed, time goes backwards.
Oh, there's a lot of stuff we could go here with this time and backwards. And I know
it's crazy, but we don't have time because there's a lot to do here today. We don't have time. So I played that because a Broadway Backwards starts tonight.
I know.
So folks can go ahead.
I love the Broadway. I love Broadway Backwards. I
me
just,
too.
You really get to celebrate artists as artists and the pieces as the piece, and not have to get into the whole nitty gritty of each show. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful event.
True that. And so that can be found. I think it's available for a couple of weeks. This is part of Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS. So Broadway Backwards, go watch it. You can.
You can.
You can if you want.
Time for everyone.
So the mayor of New York, de Blasio, is now coming to the aid of the Broadway community and taking a little action.
Yeah, there's a few different little things happening with him.
A few different things happening. But the big item is he's setting up a few theaters as vaccination sites specifically for Broadway and arts workers.
Mm-hmm.
And he is making some mobile units to go out to non-Broadway sites in New York. So that's actually pretty good. I mean, it's a little late to start having all this action, but here he does. Here he did. And he announced it with Telly Leung and Andre DeShields.
I was like, wasn't Andre there, I think? And he was.
He was. He was. They were
very active. So I'm going to say he was probably poking away, a little ear worm going, hello, hello.
So this does not change the eligibility criteria. So you still have to stay within that criteria. But by the time this thing ramps up and he's thinking it's going to be 2 to 3 weeks, that criteria will be just about everybody anyway. Right now, I think in New York, it's 50 and over. And
it just opened today, as of tomorrow, and I think it's anyone 30 and over. They just opened up
in New York.
Yeah, they just did a new age bracket in New York.
Interesting. They did not mention that in this, but that goes to the point.
Like an hour or two ago.
Yeah, like I said, that goes to the point that he figured that it'll be open. So it's good that he's doing that and concentrating on that. He's also opening up testing sites. And mobile testing sites so that as things can open, they can get tested easily and rapid tests. Now, in New York, they're already open to a certain extent, but Broadway is saying they can't make it financially viable until they can have everything open, and they are thinking sometime after Labor Day.
Yes, it was 1 hour ago.
People should know that 1 hour ago would be 1 hour ago on Monday. So 1 hour ago, 2 days ago.
48 hours ago.
Yeah. So, because we pre-record this. So we don't have a whole bunch of time here today because we have a lot of stuff with guests. So
really, I think maybe too.
Agreed. Let's just go right into our first guest, which is the Vortex Rep. With Valenicia Tolbert and Florinda Bryant talking about their show that they're opening. Here it is. It's Valenicia Tolbert and Florinda Bryant. How are you guys?
I'm good.
You know, I said that we were going to nerd out in a ballerina kind of way because we're going to talk about Val, your show, Tales of a Blurred Ballerina. And I have to say that I think I've heard the term blurred before, but I'm not sure that I've heard it before. What does that mean?
Literally black nerd.
Yeah.
Blurred.
Sometimes the simplest explanation is the one that's the right one. So this is a one-person show that's going to be done at the Vortex live.
Yes.
Okay. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. I want to hear about the show itself. And Florinda, this is, to be clear, Valenicia, this is you created it and you're performing it. And yes. Florinda, you're directing it.
Yes.
Yes.
And dramaturging. I'll just answer all the questions myself.
Yeah, it's really awesome. This process is allowing us to actually dig into the process of being in process. So, like, having an opportunity to work on a script and have a thing and work on it some more and then have another thing. It's really, it's like, it feels decadent in all the good ways, but it's such it's just such a wonderful way to get back into theater spaces, especially coming out of, you know, the pandemic, which sounds like that thing. So yeah, we're excited. Yeah. And we're doing it live.
That thing that we're tired of talking about.
Yeah, that thing. And I'm like, we doing it now. Val, it's a live performance and Val is bravely, you know, taking that first step.
That is awesome.
Exciting.
So Valenicia, tell us about this. When I read the description, it sounds like a combination of monologue, poetry. I'm going to presume there's some dance in there.
A little bit of everything. Well, the idea really came behind representation and me wanting to be able to see myself on stage, really, not the idea that someone else has created for me. And it became like a labor of love, for lack of better words, because I realized that there are a lot of conversations and stories out there about Black culture, but it's usually like tied down in something that is like a reflection of society and not of ourselves. So I knew I had a really wonderful opportunity just to create something that's specifically for young, you know, blurred women growing up awkward in overly, you know, loquacious like myself, who, you know, for a while were, you know, now it's cute, you know, now that I'm 40, they're like, oh, that's really unique about you. But it was not when I was, you know, 12, 13, 16, 24, any of that. So this is just like a love story, you know, to blurred women everywhere, just blurreds everywhere. And
when one thinks of, you know, coming from a person that looks like me, when one thinks of the Black culture, you rarely think nerd. Except for that one character on TV.
Urkel
is like the farthest of the farthest margin. But yeah, it's unfortunate because while he was adorable and wonderful and unique, he didn't get the love that he deserved. You know, he had to literally transform himself into Urkel in order, you know, to get any love. And he was still the same kind, wonderful, beautiful person he was before. And that's, you know, that's kind of the thing, is we're always having to transform ourselves from being the just human that we are to fit this confine of what's acceptable.
Right. The world wants to put you in a specific box that frankly not many people fit into, I would assume.
Really? Yeah. I mean, probably two people do. And are those interesting people?
But depends. Am I one of them?
No, we're all like breaking out of the box, you know, like that's the exciting thing, and the people that you actually want to talk to. So, yeah.
Well, great. So what? So you and I worked together just about a year ago. It was a little over a year ago. And I don't know if this was, we didn't talk about this. So was this in process prior to that, or is this something that happened after that?
This is something that happened after that. Performance Platform actually, you know, I'll probably talk about them a little bit. Performance Platform approached me about producing a work with me. And I was like, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it, you know, kicking and screaming. But I realized I should also put my money where my mouth is. You know what I mean.
Yep, gotcha.
I was like, I should take up the opportunity. And Sarah Saltwick definitely pushed really hard, like, oh, okay, these are some ideas that you know, we are going to do a show together. And the more I started talking, the more she was like, I really think you need to write a solo piece. Or at least like a piece on your own, and we'll see what happens with that. And we just started tinkering around and playing, and like ideas just started flowing. I mean, we're literally sitting at home, even doing remote work. All of your things, your little things are all around you. So the ideas just start kind of flowing, and felt natural.
Well, that's awesome. And I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about Performance Platform, because we're going to try to get them on the show maybe next week, because I hadn't heard of them. But suffice it to say, it's a group of producers and creatives that want to support artists like yourself. And they're done through the auspices of the Museum of Human Achievement. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct. I haven't worked out of Human Achievement yet, but I know that they are closely tied with Miss Katie Bender and Sarah Saltwick. Sure. And Alexandra. You know, I'm going to get her last name wrong. I feel bad.
Just got Alex.
There we go, Alex. And, you know, Miss Jennifer Connolly, and just beautiful, kind spirits. And Liz Fisher, beautiful, kind spirits. So it's been
awesome. So Florinda, tell us about when you got involved in this process. Were you there from the very beginning?
No, I it was after I probably was your second reading that and let me just say this. I've been following Val around. I love her as a performer and as an artist, and where I'm always like, hey, how are we gonna work together? Like, hey, what you doing over there? just because she's someone that I just have so much respect for as an artist. And once she said she was doing a thing, I already from my end was like, how am I going to get?
I thought I was stalking her, really. I thought I was doing the work. Like,
how do I bring it up? And then I heard the title. And I just was like, okay, boom, yes. I think, you know, when we're talking about the timing of it all, as we're continuing to advocate for, you know, all Black Lives Matter. That means all Black Lives Matter. And it gives communities outside of the Black community, like they have their work to do, but some of the work that we get to do for us is about examining some of the ways that the patriarch, white racist structures have infiltrated our ways of identifying for ourselves and towards each other. And, you know, when you, being able to step into claiming, you know, because we get like you sounding white, or you know, you're not. There's all of this other stuff that gets that we have ingested, and I think that she's the perfect performer to tell her story and to bring this message to stages. And it's definitely something that young people need to see and to know that you're not alone. And it's at such a time of isolation, right? Like our poor children and poor adults. But I mean, like when I think about young people specifically, just how hard this whole thing we just experienced, trauma upon trauma, has been for them. Even now more than ever, they need our support. And this piece is going to be a part of that awesome fabric that holds them.
Mm-hmm. So this is going to be done at the Vortex, both live and virtual, correct?
Correct.
So tell us about what, because this is like one of the very first theaters inside Austin that is bringing in live performances. And this is in April 9th to 18th. Tell us about how you guys are handling people coming into the space.
A lot of that, besides the people who are actually involved in the show being tested pretty much every two weeks, we have very limited space. I know it's a seat that seats about a stage that seats 98. We're only admitting 10 people per show. Everyone's going to be masked. It is that idea of, and also taking out the first couple of rows, so it's not, you know, us being involved inside of the space and breathing on each other, obviously. Having a one-person show is probably the ideal situation for this, because, you know, we can practice a lot as far as like what that interaction is or is not. And they've really been taking a lot of care as far as figuring out and, you know, sanitization process, all of that kind of stuff after each show. So it's been really unique, but they're in a unique space where they do have a bar attached to them, and they've had to already start practicing all these protocols that a lot of us are catching up to. They've already been having to do that with that restaurant space outside. So
right.
It's one of the few times that I feel very comfortable walking in and being around.
And I know that the Vortex has updated their HVAC system, so yes, That's all really good as
new
well.
New filters, everything.
Yeah, they're doing so much, and I love that there's just the option of, you know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
I definitely feel like what's going to happen naturally, people that have been vaccinated will feel more inclined to be in a space, and then the people that have not are going to feel more inclined to not.
I think it's interesting, right, when you're watching streaming too, even if it's a small amount of people in the audience, that tangible feeling that you get from when you're there, you can feel that through the screen. When there's just that small amount of people, it does feel connected.
Sure. We only have a limited amount of time left, but I just wanted to, before we get into the deets of where people can get information, I want to know, as me as an audience member, if I'm coming there in person or watching the virtual online, how am I going to feel when I leave? What's the general feeling of the show?
Oh man, that's a complicated one. I know the tag is usually, you know, my love of Pearl Jam doesn't ease my struggle. And I think that's kind of how people feel when they leave. You know, there's joy. Like, you can listen to a Pearl Jam song and have elation and have like a little tear going on too. It's just an experience of living life and loving life, but also knowing that it's not always perfect.
Great. Wonderful. And where can folks go to get information about the show?
They can go to my website, avalanesia.com, but they can also go to the Vortex website at thevortexrep.com. I believe
.org.
I'm getting that right. .org. I had to pull it up, make sure I wasn't saying it wrong. Thank you for that correction.
It's okay. I'll always protect you. I always know the answer before I ask the question.
Thank you. I'm glad that you did. Yes, at thevortexrep.org.
Well,
and
I am
right there, Megan Berg.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it either in person or online. And I'm I wish you the best of everything with the show. And I'm so thrilled to just see the two of you right now.
Indeed. Indeed. I got very excited when I saw all this happening on the emails. And I was like, this is some jazz hand going on here in my house.
I'm like, so excited.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us on Offstage and on the Air.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, bye. Excellent. That's really,
that was
really
excellent.
Good.
It was a lovely afternoon chatting with them.
It was lovely. So I want to talk about more stuff, shall we?
Okay, let's do it. There's lots of, there's actually been some interesting stuff.
Yeah, did you read on The Stage written, this is an article written by Lynn Gardner, The Stage, and The Stage is... UK periodical that is an equivalent to, I don't know, Variety maybe, or something that's specific to theater, which we don't really have.
It's like a Variety meets Playbill, so to speak.
Yeah. But anyway, she wrote this article about getting rid of intermissions completely. Of course, she calls them intervals because they do that.
Let's say, you mean intervals.
So I read the headline, and of course, before reading the article, I was totally against it. I need my thing, my theater, the way I'm accustomed to having it, and I won't change at all. But actually, after having read it, I've got a little bit of leeway. So this is all coming on the heels of the Globe announcing that its next season will be without intermission or intervals. Mm-hmm. And these are Shakespeare plays, which are long.
I love in unison, we're both like, long.
But they say that they're doing it this year. Next season is going to have King Lear, which is like 150 hours long. That would be bad.
With no intervals.
But here's something interesting. So you probably knew this because you know more than I do.
I don't know.
Shakespeare wasn't written to have intervals.
Oh, that I did know.
I told you would know it.
It's written without it in the first place, so...
Well, and I always thought, I assume that since they are separated into acts, so that naturally there would be intervals between those acts. But they weren't. They weren't written that. And the idea is, and so my whole thing was... As an audience goer, I want to go to the restroom and I don't want to get up in the middle of the show because that's rude. Her argument is, shouldn't be rude. You should be able to get up and go to the bathroom during a show. And it does say that a lot of times companies are searching to find the right place to put an intermission. I've been in that situation. You know, okay, we've got a new show. My rule is 90 minutes. You have to have an intermission. So if it's 92 minutes, where do I place the golly intermission? And I did not realize this, and it'll be interesting to see whether you knew this. I'll quiz you. This will be a better way to do it. Do you know why intermissions were started in the first place?
Oh, at one point I did know, and I don't remember offhand.
Well, here's the hint. It happened when theater moved indoors.
I don't know why.
Because the candles had to be changed.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. No, I don't think that's why I knew that, but that's fascinating.
Yeah. So part of this article talks about the whole, and we've talked about it on this show too, the relaxing of rules for theater goers. And why is it rude for theater goers to shout at the actors or somehow if the spirit moves them? And I truly am conflicted on this, but I get the idea of that being the case. And if the rules are relaxed, what does it matter if somebody gets up in the middle of the show and goes to the bathroom or goes and grabs a Toblerone at the concession stand?
I hear you. No, I read that article. I guess it just really depends.
Yeah, I think you're right.
There's some shows that I just am totally cool. No intermission. I'm in it to win it. I never even notice it. there's some shows that I'm like, why did we even just have an intermission? That is weird to me when you're in and in and you're like, what was that?
And so, yeah, I'll tell you, if it's a truly not good show, I just can't wait for that. But you know,
you can't be a one act Annie if it's a bad show. So there's your only, like, there you go. I guess there's a bad thing to it.
Intermissions. You love them, you hate them.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag, but it was an interesting article. And I think she made some really good conversation pieces to talk about.
Agreed. Let's listen to a song called Snyder Comes Along from the Broadway cast album of Grumpy Old Men. Here it is.
You wouldn't be in this jam if you hadn't tried to cheat.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. As a reminder, folks, during the pandemic, we are pre-recorded. I'm guessing you saw this. It's a London Drama School Arts Ed. It's introducing intimacy training and sign language into its acting course.
Yeah, so smart, so important, so cool. Hello, America.
Well, so much of our current sensibilities is to have intimacy training. And intimacy training doesn't not necessarily mean it's a love scene. So fight scenes, also, you need to, you know, people need to feel comfortable with the physicality of theater in lots of different ways. So anytime that you're, you know, encroaching on another person's physical space, it's probably a good time to have someone that is able to, you know, talk about it openly and things that...
Yeah, to make everyone feel comfortable.
But what I love that they're doing as well is they are integrating sign language into their curriculum as well. And of course, I am purposely not saying ASL because it isn't ASL. It's BSL, which is British Sign Language. Yeah, because sign language is specific to the spoken language that it takes place in. So this is, you know, so important for accessibility reasons, but also for the wide knowledge that is needed for an actor to do their training. So it's another skill set and another way to communicate.
It is. It's another tool that is very much needed. And I think it's just so smart. I can't believe it's 2021 and it's just being in, you know what I mean? To be honest with you.
And see, and yet I can. We are slow moving people. But I think that is good. And so they're working with a theater or with a company called Definitely, which is DEAFinitely.
Okay, cute? That's a really, really great name.
I'm going to speak to my friend Brian Cheslick, who runs Deaf Austin Theater, and ask him why he didn't come up with that.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I was just thinking to myself, it sounds like something Brian could have come up with.
It sure does.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something interesting that's coming to Broadway in the year of our Lord 2022. And I'm surprised I had not heard of this. Once again, guessing you have. The Melvin Van Peebles show Ain't Supposed to Die a Natural Death.
No, I didn't hear about that, but that's kind of exciting.
Well, it premiered on Broadway in 1971. It was nominated for all the Tonys. Didn't win, but it did win the Drama Desk Awards. And it is being directed by Kenny Leon.
Oh, love him.
Yep. Yeah. And it's interesting. So this is a series of, and I didn't realize this until I went and did some research. Melvin Van Peebles did, I think, three shows and then a soundtrack to a film. So he's been doing a lot of theatrical kind of music. But this is all done, it's about the realities of street life, about Black people in America, and it's done in musical vignettes and poetry.
I knew the show, but I didn't realize they were like, I didn't realize that Kenny Leon's attached to like a whole new thing. Like, that's exciting.
It really is. And in the original production, amongst other people, Garrett Morris of Saturday Night Live fame was in it.
Really?
Yeah. And there's a great, I think it's the Tony performance of, we're going to hear a little bit of in a second, but Garrett Morris was featured in the Tony performance, and he looks really young, because he is.
Well, the whole Van Peebles family is like a big showbiz family.
I don't know who the other Van Peebles are.
You don't know his son, Mario Van Peebles?
No, I don't think so.
New Jack City? He was just recently actually in one of the musical films. He directed it and then was in it. Maybe it was the Whitney Houston thing. I don't know. If you saw the whole family, you'd know. But they're a giant, giant showbiz dynasty name. Aunts, uncles.
Cool. So also in 1971, other people in the cast who I should have noted was Ozzie Davis and Felicia Rashad. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I love that. So some of the musical numbers, there was a cast album done, not available digitally.
Oh, well, that's if we were at the library, we could go and listen to it, kind of thing.
Well, like I said, we're going to play a little bit of the Tony performance in a second, but you could always order the album and buy it and play it on your thing. But one of the, I don't know why this makes me happy, but one of the songs is called Hehe, parentheses, Chuckle, Good Morning Sunshine.
Parentheses, Chuckle.
Chuckle. So that was one I could not get my grubby little hands upon. But let's take a moment to listen to a little bit of this from the Tony Awards. This is Just Don't Make No Sense.
Just don't make no sense the way my horns are hurting me.
Let's listen to our friends at Austin Creative Alliance. There's a couple of things that they're doing here, but let's start off and listen to Jenny Lavery from Austin Creative Alliance talking about the unified auditions.
It is
Austin Creative Alliance's very own Jenny Lavery. How are you?
Good. How are you?
And we have Tori Laws Phillips. How are you?
I am wonderful.
And I really apologize, Jenny. I did not answer your question. Any better and I would be twins. Well, we're so glad to have you. We're talking about a couple of projects that the Austin Creative Alliance is doing. So voila. Let's talk first about the unified auditions, shall we?
We shall.
Well, we all know what the unified auditions are, but in case we don't, what are the unified auditions?
The unified auditions are an annual event that ACA hosts, really just trying to make casting directors, directors, and agents accessible to artists and production staffs who want to audition in front of all of them all at once, or if you're a production person, like a costume designer or a director or a stage manager, you can pitch your philosophy of work and just get in front of those folks who are casting projects.
I love the unified auditions. As you know, I am a consumer as someone who runs Ground Floor Theater, and we have gotten several of our actors directly from the unified audition. So it's a great thing from a production standpoint. And I don't know if I've told you, and I don't know if I've told our audiences, I was the organizer of what was called something else back when it was ACOT, and we called it the Texas State Auditions. We were trying to make it a Texas thing. I did it for a couple of years.
That's amazing. You know, I have to say, it is my favorite event. I just love casting events, but I love it because people show up who we don't always see on the stages in Austin, people who just moved here or who are in school and graduating or have moved through like a phase of their life and they have a little more time and they want to get back to their craft. I love it because you get to see people do who might not be on the stages all the time, and you get to see people who you do see on the stages a lot do things that you never knew they could do.
Right.
There was a moment. Go ahead.
No, please. Sounded like you were going to tell a story.
Oh, there was a moment last year that. This guy, I won't name his name, but who does a lot of plays, and he was also in the room as an auditor, and just out of nowhere he sprang out of his seat and came down singing one of the songs from Last 5 Years and like nailed it. He was so good and it was so surprising. And you have people who bring in their guitars and who have these beautiful like folk voices who you didn't know. It's a fun event.
Well, you're clearly very passionate about it. I guess 2 years, maybe 3 years ago, you started the allowing technicians and designers to come in. And tell folks how that works.
Yeah. So for actors, you get a minute where you can do a monologue. And then if you choose to do 30 seconds of music as well. For the production folks, we wanted to open it up to people so that a lot of the producers in town are always going, oh man, do you know a costume designer? Do you know a stage manager? And so this is a way for those folks to come into the room. They have a minute where they can pitch their philosophy of work, their aesthetic, what they like to do, how they approach an artistic process, and kind of just give you a little bit about themselves. And then, you know, if you want to know more, then you get all their materials and everything where you can follow up and see their portfolio and the resume and all that good stuff.
So now in years past, it has been done at the Vortex in person. And I have to say from a theater standpoint, I just have a great time because we get to sit and chat with our peers. And then indeed it is actually very fun when one of them jumps up and starts auditioning because we all wear very many hats in this business. Mm-hmm. But this year, I take it you're not doing it in person.
We are not. We are doing it virtually for the first time ever. So folks can self-tape and submit their self-tapes by April 15th. And then after that, about 2 weeks after that, we're going to convene the auditors to do a sort of watch party. And in that way, we can ensure who's actually, quote unquote, in the room and seeing those folks auditioning.
Well, I love it that so you could either get your taxes in or get a tape in.
Which taxes have been extended to May, so you can just focus on the unified auditions.
That's true. So how can folks get information about this? If they want to audition, if they want to do a pitch, or if they want to be somebody watching, an auditor, thank you.
Yeah. go to Austin Creative Alliance. .com. And if you look under the events tab, you'll find the virtual unified auditions information there.
Can I suggest you that they go to austincreativealliance.org?
Yes, you can.
just a suggestion on my part.
And I'm going to have another sip of coffee.
I will tell folks, I think this is it's a wonderful project. I think it's a lot of fun for the auditors. I think it's kind of a lot of fun for the auditioners as well, especially when we're in person, because at the Vortex, there's the lobby area where everybody comes together. And Jenny, you do just such a wonderful job of organizing it. It's having gone through this in many years and many different incarnations, it's much more enjoyable, much more efficient nowadays. So
thank you. Thanks.
Or nowadays.
It's like I said, it's a really fun event. I love running it and I love being surprised by folks and seeing folks. And I will say that the casting directors are, the film casting directors are really showing up in force in the last couple of years. And I know a lot of folks who've gotten commercial film and TV work, Beth Sepko is a huge champion of this event. And so, you know, I think if folks are not necessarily as interested as in the live theater world, but are more interested in the film, TV, commercial world, it's a great way to get seen.
That is great. And I should say that when I organized these, we did them at the State Theater, and I had a partner in crime. There was two of us doing it, and that partner was Heather Collier.
Yeah.
So we all keep it in the family. So now let's get to the other project I'm very, very excited about. I just love the Unified Auditions. I really do. And I said it in the interview, so.
I know. It was you've always been a big fan of it. You've talked about it from when you were part of it and to it still going on. Like, yeah.
Yep.
I'm glad to have Jenny talk about that. That was great.
And I am sure you saw this in our very own Sightlines magazine here in the series A Year In. Mr. Mark Puhay was interviewed. Did you read that interview?
I did read the interview. I loved it. I was so excited for him. I just love him.
Who doesn't love?
He's so talented and he just kicks it up all the time. And he's mean, he's not, he's singing, he's romantic. He's everything. He's Mark Puhay.
He is everything and he can do no wrong.
Yeah.
But they talked about what he was planning on doing before the pandemic hit. And A was Scrooge at Zach Theater, but also, and I think this was supposed to be done at Ground Floor Theater, which is Jarrett King's remaking of A War of the Worlds done by Penfold Theater Company. And I did see, they did a Zoom reading of it, and I watched that a little bit. So that was interesting. They asked him questions about what good he thinks came of this whole thing and what surprised him and what changes to the theater should be permanent. And he, as so many people have said, some form of online presence. And I think that that's probably true. Okay. We're going to jump back and talk to the folks at Austin Creative Alliance about their workshops that they've got. We're specifically going to talk to Tori Laws Phillips. Hi, Tori.
Hi there. How are you?
Groovy. Ooh. You guys are doing, along with Coaltown Theater, EDI workshops. First of all, what's EDI stand for?
It is Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. Sometimes yes. It's EDI, sometimes it's DEI.
Yeah, it's gone actually through a lot of different incarnations, but currently EDI is the word. And it's really, it's really important. Some of us have been doing this work for a long, long time. But now, since the Black Lives Matter has gained prominence and, thank God, acceptance, people are really going, I've got to pay attention to this. And I actually have to stop giving lip service to this. But gosh, I really don't know where to start. Right?
Well, we're making it easy for people to find a place to start, but also it's a series of workshops. So you can come in not knowing where to start, or you can come in having read a couple of books and having an idea that you need to do a little more and wondering what the next steps are. So we kind of start at your own personal biases and then go all the way up to creating policies and diffusing those difficult conversations in the workplace or within your organizations. We kind of work on all of those levels, and it's really exciting because we get to do it utilizing the basic tenets of improv. So it's a no judgment space. We take the edge off of those sticky, icky feelings kind of subjects. And it's really about not judging it, really raising your empathy and enjoying learning with the people in the proverbial Zoom room.
Right. I should tell folks that we've been talking to Tori Laws Phillips, who is going to be facilitating these, and is also the co-owner of Cold Town Theater. Now, as someone who has taken many trainings on diversity and anti-bias and anti-racism, they can sometimes be a little staid and boring, but I'm taking it that you're going to bring it to a level that's going to...
We're all laughing and the listeners can't see the face you made.
Well, you know, I think that my personal view being a Black woman in America is that people of color and people that are a part of marginalized groups, we aren't sad about the state of our lives. Like, for most of us, it is simply been a symptom of living. And so this conversation doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be guilt-ridden awfulness. It can be, hey, how are we going to get better together? And let me tell you, people are a whole lot more interested in getting better and learning together if the conversation is dynamic and fueled with the feelings about being positive versus getting stuck in the negativity and vitriol and guilt. I think that guilt is a powerful force for doing better. However, I am not the receptacle for your guilt.
Damn, I was hoping you would be.
We use those icebreakers and, you know, a little bit of that silliness from improv to warm people up. It's easier to go into difficult conversations as if everybody in the room loses a little dignity together at the top. That also just lowers our inhibitions. It also makes it easier to see each other's humanity. If you can smile and look someone in the eye, even if it's over Zoom, it's much easier to accept someone's humanity if we don't build those walls with all of our status and all of the things that make us important. None of that really matters at the end of the day. And who you are as a person is what we build empathy towards. So yeah, it ends up being super powerful and fun, dare I say?
Yeah. So, well, that brings me to my next point. Well, you know, this is really difficult work. And you're going to be hitting on subjects that push a lot of folks' buttons. Now, I understand the fun part of it and breaking the ice and the improv side of you, but I'm presuming you're a trained person in diversity training.
Yes. I have been doing diversity trainings for 5 years. I've been teaching and doing improv. I've been doing improv for 14 years, which is difficult because I'm only 21.
You can start at 7 years old is not too early.
Sure enough, it's programs all over the city. But we developed this particular program, the basis for the foundation for this program 5 years ago with a local software company who was wondering why, you know, at 3 years, all the women and all of the people of color in their offices weren't interested in staying. And they were like, hey, it's Austin and we're tech. So we have we've got video games and a beer keg. So why isn't everybody love it here? And ultimately this is the reason because the boys club sucks for everyone else. And what we did was we figured out how to approach those conversations in ways that open up those empathetic channels. And yeah, we can have those more difficult conversations, but ultimately I'm not here to judge you for your opinions. We can have that, like we can talk through your opinions versus my opinions and what the ultimate truth of statistics and shared lives are. I find that it's very hard for someone to look at me and tell me that my story doesn't matter to my face. Because my personal stories exhibit so many of these issues. And so also it's easier once I make them talk about their childhood trauma. You know, you pry open the can a little bit and it's hard to deny someone else's life experience when you've already shared your own. So,
right. Well, I want to, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last piece.
No, I was just saying the improv part of it helps with the tough stuff too.
Absolutely. We don't have a whole bunch of time left, but I want to give folks an idea of some of the subject matters, because there are seven different workshops.
Nine
different workshops. Seven, yeah. Nine, seriously.
Just like the musical, nine series.
Can you give folks a taste of what some of the different programs are?
We have Understanding Cultural Racism. We have Microaggressions in the Workplace, one of my personal favorites. Allyship and Bystander Intervention, because everybody needs a plan. Not everybody's a hero, but everything you do does matter. We also have Developing an EDI Program for Your Workplace and Organization, as well as facilitating those difficult EDI conversations. So,
great. Well, there's a whole bunch that folks can find on the Austin Creative Alliance website under events. Is that correct?
That is very correct.
Excellent. Well, I know that myself and my staff at the Ground Floor Theater are going to be taking two of them, at the very least, the ones that pertain towards organizations. And I do want to suggest that folks individually should come in. You don't have to be in theater to take these. Is that correct?
No, not at all. Cold Town does this work with a lot of corporate entities that are not in the arts. And it's wonderful for a lot of these are great for small business owners, people who just want to get a little better, people who understand that this matters to them. I think, you were talking about how that shift has happened in society. I think what people now are understanding is that where they put their money matters. And that's a big difference than where we were 5 years ago when this work was about what happened internally with a company. Now this really affects the customer front or face for most organizations. So it's very.
And a personal note, it's really fascinating to learn and to be able to come outside yourself, especially in the area of microaggressions, because I would say the majority, if not like vast majority of people doing microaggressions don't know they're doing it.
No, and that's because I'm sure somebody listening will be like, what's a microaggression? The thing that I like to say is that a microaggression is that unconscious thing you do to someone that is harmful. And the micro is the consciousness you have about what you're doing. It's not about the impact. So the impact of that action can still be huge and difficult for someone else, but you literally didn't know. And so this is really unlocking that and paying attention, because guess what? Everybody has some bias, and you're probably acting and reacting on those things without understanding. So that's a great one for everyone.
Right. I agree. So wonderful. Give folks the website where they can get information one last time.
That is AustinCreativeAlliance.org.
Tori Laws Phillips and Jenny Lavery, thank you so much for being on Offstage and on the Air.
Thank you so much.
So important. I'm really happy that they are doing that work.
Me too. And that was another great interview. We had really good interviews this week.
All right. That's it. You've done it. You've listened to another hour of Offstage and on the Air. Congratulations. You get a Girl Scout badge for that. You didn't hear this, but the Zoom doesn't like it when you yell or speak loudly or show enthusiasm of any sort.
Oh, I'll have to do the Olympics clap. They're allowed.
There you go. So folks, we will see you next week when Nicole and I look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Adieu, mon amis.
Adieu.